I'm the oldest, so I'm expected to be out in the barn, 5:30 in the morning, helping with the milking. We had two barn lanterns. My dad had one, I had one. I hang my barn lantern on the nail in back of the cows on the north end of the barn. South end of the barn, my dad hangs his lantern on the nail, and the cows are all lined up. There's about 14, 16 of them, all standing in stanchions. And I have my cows to milk, and he has his cows to milk. And the barn on a winter day is the warmest place on the farm. And underneath the big old Holstein cow is by far the most comfortable place you could find, as strange as that sounds. And so I would crawl under this cow, put the milk pail between my knees, sit on a three-legged stool, and grab the spigots and start milking. And a cat comes by and you squirt a little milk in the direction of the cat. And I'm tucked under this big old Holstein and she's looking around at me and she's saying, "Good morning, Jerry," and I'm kind of half asleep and I'm all just getting warm. I have the easy milking cows. My dad has the tougher ones to do. When they'd come into the barn, they each knew to come into their own stall. Violet and Maisie, and there would be Dolores and Florence. Everyone had its own name. And we got to know every one of them. And our farm dog knew their personalities better than I did, because she dealt with each cow in a very particular way. And even in a mysterious kind of way, there's a communication between animal species that we don't understand. And that was going on with Fanny talking to these cattle, and they had great respect for her. Farm life was a quiet time during those years before electricity and tractors and all the rest of the noisy stuff that came along. That's when I got to know my dad. He might be in a cow right next to me, and he would sometimes ask how things are going, but not usually. I would usually have to ask some question, and then he would answer it. Now, my dad was a wonderful storyteller. Oh my gosh. He got as far as fifth grade in school. In his generation, by the time you got big enough to work, didn't matter how old you were, big enough to work, you worked. But I learned something very important from the fact that he only had a fifth grade education. Formal education does not necessarily equate with being smart. He knew how to fix most everything. He knew how to take care of animals, and he had a wonderful way of figuring. He could figure in his head faster than most people could figure with a calculator today. He was very well liked by the neighbors. He would help anybody with anything. And you look at his face and you could tell satisfaction in his face if you did something well. But there was none of this good job stuff and all that. We didn't do that. In early March, when I would get up in the morning to go out to the barn, now the days are somewhat longer already, and I would look for the dripping of eaves, the first melt. You get out to the barn and Pa might say something like, "I can smell spring today," and it's right, I could too. He's getting anxious because by the time we get to the middle of March, he wants to get out in the fields. There's work to be done, there's plowing to do with a team of horses and a one-bottom 16-inch walking plow. I don't remember all of that because I did it. And I talk to kids sometimes and I talk about walking plows and they think the plow was walking. The plow was not walking. I was the one that was doing the walking and the team was walking. Frank and Charlie were their names. Plowing with a team of horses requires about four or five eyes. You got to keep your eye on the team, you got to keep your eye on the plow, you got to keep your eye on where you're headed, because you want to go in a straight line. One of the things that you were prized for is whether you could plow in a straight line. And so you had a marker, maybe your handkerchief was hanging on a tree a quarter mile away, and you see that and you're plowing toward that. You got another eye looking for stones, and you'd hold on to the plow handles, and whenever the plow would hit a stone, it would leap out of the ground, and you'd put it back in and go. I mean, you're just beside yourself. Talk about my mother for a little bit. She got as far as seventh grade in school because, again, her folks said, "Well, it's time for you to find a job." And so she became a maid when she was, 13 years old. My mother had two major projects, the garden and the chickens, and she ruled both with a heavy hand. And We were under her employ when those two things were involved. We had probably 100, 150 laying hens, white leghorns they were. And every year we'd replace some of them. The old chickens became stew in the fall and we canned the chicken meat and all that kind of stuff. But the new chicks we would order from a hatchery someplace in southern Wisconsin, and they would arrive at the depot, the train depot. And George Collum was the depot agent, and he would call on the party line telephone. And he'd say, "Herman, your chicks are here." And I remember going down with my dad to the depot, and here are stacks of chicks. The boxes were about like that, and they were divided into little squares, and I suppose there were six or eight little chicks in each corner. And they're peeping their hearts out. I mean, it's just a wonderful sound. All these little chicks just a peeping away. And so we'd stack these little chicks in the back of the car, bring them home, take them in the house, and put them back of the wood stove to warm them up. Because this was usually in April, and it's kind of chilly. And it was kind of fun. The little chicks were just grand to watch them grow up. But when the chicks had grown up, then they found their way into the hen house. And the ones that my mother had declared, obsolete's the wrong word, but they're not producing well anymore, pull them off the shelf, and we would have a chicken butchering day. And I tell you, one time the city cousins were out when we were butchering chickens, and they could not handle the fact that there would be as many as two or three chickens running around without their heads on. And we, of course, took all this for granted. Never bought a chicken in a grocery store that I ever remember. Never did that. It sounds terrible and it sounds gruesome and all the rest of it, but it was a very natural progression of from the chick to the hen house to the cellar shelf and to our table.